This call is being recorded.
Okay, wonderful. Well, hello and welcome, everybody, to the teleclass on emotional intimacy, creating the connection you want, even when one of you wants more closeness and the other needs more space. And this is Ruth.
And this is Michelle.
And we are so happy to have you here with us because we see a lot of pain and confusion among lesbians related to this issue. And we're delighted to teach you more about how to resolve this conflict and other conflicts in your relationship so that you can really have the connection you want.
We hear a lot over and over again that relationships are hard. They're just so much work. They just take so much, you know, to deal with. And we hear from a lot of women who have given up on relationships altogether because it just feels like it's too much work and it's not worth the struggle and sacrifice anymore. We also hear from a lot of women who still love each other but feel like their relationship has reached an impossible place and they just can't seem to see any way out.
So the most important thing that we want to communicate tonight is that when you have the right tools, relationships don't have to be so hard and they don't have to feel like so much work. They don't have to be a struggle, and they also don't have to require you to give yourself up or sacrifice things that are important to you.
Yeah, I mean, they can actually be easy, filled with connection, mutual generosity, and respect, and a lot of fun. That's the kind of relationship that we have, and we've had it for 9 years now. And it's not just because we found the right partner. I think that's often a myth that people say. We like to say that, you know, if we'd met before we had met, it would have been a disaster. It's because we use very specific processes to help us heal our conflicts before they even become conflicts. And we're not just talking about stuffing them underground. We're not talking about, you know, just putting them on a shelf. We're talking about actually healing them when they happen. And we're going to tell you more about that process later.
The process that we use for conflict healing, which we call the SCORE process, is very powerful. And once you really know how to use it, it can become quite automatic. And it totally stops fights and hurt feelings and resentments and conflicts in their tracks. So we want to start by asking you if you've ever felt one of the following things or even both of them. Scenario number one, your girlfriend or partner or wife seems distant and far away. Maybe she doesn't call you or text you much anymore, or she doesn't spend much time with you. Maybe you live together, but you're just not spending intimate time. It feels like she's not really listening to you or sharing herself with you anymore. And even though she says she still cares, it doesn't feel like she cares because she doesn't seem to want to be close. So you might be feeling hurt or lonely or abandoned, or like you just feel like she doesn't want to be with you anymore.
Or scenario number two is your girlfriend keeps asking for more from you, more time, more attention, more closeness than you feel like you can give. You might feel guilty that you're not meeting her needs. You might feel overwhelmed, or you might be starting to resent her or the relationship. You might feel like she's gotten so clingy and needy that it's hard to want to be close to her even though you still love her.
And if you've ever been in either one of these scenarios, we completely feel compassion for you, we ourselves. I know I've been in both of those scenarios at different times.
And I've been mostly in scenario number two.
Uh-huh. So we have been there, and we want you to know that this is the right class for you. This dynamic where one person wants more closeness and one needs more space is incredibly common in relationships between women, and we're going to explain tonight why this happens so often and, even more importantly, what you can do about it.
And it's important to say there is a way for both partners to get their needs met, but you can't get there by fighting or crying or getting emotional or pleading for her to change, threatening to leave, or trying to make her jealous. And surprisingly enough, you also can't get there by trying to compromise. We'll explain more about that in a minute. None of those approaches will create the ongoing emotional intimacy and connection you really want. Even if one of them seems to work temporarily, it will eventually backfire and make things worse and lead to an unhappy relationship and probably a breakup.
So we just want to tell you very briefly about ourselves before we tell you more about the solution that does work to this dilemma. We are a married queer couple. We've been together for 9 years, as Michelle mentioned, and we have an amazing relationship. It's really better than any relationship I ever imagined being able to be in.
Me too, yeah.
we have a lot of connection. We're very close. We share our full selves with each other. We live and work together and spend a lot of high-quality time together. And we also spend some high-quality time apart, doing things that only one of us wants to do without having any conflict about it.
So how do we get this to this blissful state and to the point where we actually started teaching other lesbians how to get there too? Well, our backgrounds are in neuroscience. That's my PhD in psychology, which is Ruth's PhD. We both have PhDs in those fields, and we've also studied relationship coaching with two of the top relationship experts in the world, Gay and Katie Hendricks, who have been great mentors for us. I have a very long Buddhist meditation practice for over 25 years, and Ruth has worked with many individuals and couples doing spiritual healing therapy called heart-mind integration.
But in many ways, our most important learning has come from the long, difficult road that we each traveled to get to the happy relationship we have today. We both went through some really painful relationships with a lot of effort and, you know, couldn't make them work, and some excruciating breakups. We're going to tell you a little bit more about those tonight. And so once we finally learned how to have the healthy, deeply connected relationship we always wanted and spent some years feeling grateful and enjoying ourselves, we decided that we really wanted to give back to our community because there's been so little information out there. You know, there's a ton of relationship information out there in the world, but almost none of it is specific for lesbians and queer women. And we have found that there are some specific issues that come up more often and in particular ways that are different in our community. Mm-hmm. And especially at this moment, you know, where we have just won the right to get married everywhere in this country. It's such an amazing thing. You know, anyone who's anywhere near our age, we're in our 50s, knows that, like, we would never have even dreamed that this would happen in our lifetime.
Exactly, yeah.
And so it's so amazing that we can get married, and it makes it even more important that we learn how to have the truly happy, healthy relationships mm-hmm. that we all want to have.
Yeah.
So in early last year, we started Conscious Girlfriend to help lesbians and queer women learn how to date wisely and love well. And later on, we'll tell you more about how you can do further work with us beyond this call, if you're interested. So now we want to tell you a little bit of what our love lives were like before we learned the tools and skills we have now, because you might be able to relate to some of these stories. In my first long-term relationship, I was totally in love at first, but within about a year, I started to feel like I was losing myself, and I needed to pull away to find myself again. But the more I pulled away, the more needy and jealous my partner got, and the more she clung to me, the more I felt like I needed to pull away. So we got into this vicious cycle. There were a lot of horrible fights and tears, and we broke up several times and then got back together again, but we just kept getting stuck in the same places. And I started to feel like a really horrible person for hurting her so much, but we didn't understand how to break the pattern. Now, years later, I was in another relationship. I was actually traveling in India with my partner at the time, and she started pushing me away emotionally. And I was thousands of miles away from home, and having her get distant totally freaked me out. She stopped really wanting to talk to me or touch me. She seemed irritated by my presence. And I just was in a state of panic. And I'm not a drinker, but I actually went and bought some whiskey because I was just like, I didn't know how to calm myself down. So I share this so that you can hear, you know, kind of the depth of pain. And I'm imagining that a lot of you on the call have been in one of those sides or the other, or maybe both. So after a while, I had more of these kinds of experiences in more relationships, and I started to feel like Goldilocks, you know, like each bowl of porridge was either too hot or too cold, and it was impossible to find a relationship that would be just right.
And I had both kinds of relationships too. In my first long-term relationship, my partner would get really upset and jealous if I wanted to do something on my own, like go to a meditation retreat. She would take it as a sign that I didn't want to spend time with her. And she would make my life so miserable that when I tried to do things without her, I basically stopped doing them. So So I just felt like she really would make my life miserable if I tried to do something on my own. And so I just stopped. But I didn't feel good about that. It didn't feel right to me. But I felt like I had to give up myself to please her. In my second long-term relationship, I also gave myself up in many ways. I went along to do a lot of things that she wanted to do that I didn't really want to do, like watching sports on TV and shopping. These are two things that, well, I certainly hate shopping. And I actually have not watched very much sports on TV since we broke up. But she wanted to do it. She wanted me to do it with her, and so I did it. And even so, she sometimes pulled away and stopped talking to me for hours or even days. This would make me feel really scared, and I would just try even harder to please her in the hope that she'd stop pulling away. But it never worked. And so by the time Ruth and I found each other, we weren't so young anymore, and we'd both had a lot of painful relationship breakups, and we were determined to find the right formula to make our relationship work. Not just work pretty well, you know, not just sort of okay, but to really be deeply happy and healthy and filled with love and intimacy and connection and joy.
And the good news is we did find that formula. And in the last year and a half, we have been teaching it to hundreds of women in our classes and through coaching. So we know for sure that it works. And tonight we're going to give you the outlines of it. We can't teach you the whole process in just an hour, but we will do everything we can to make a big difference in your understanding of emotional intimacy and how to work things out when two people want different things so that you can both be happy and your love can stay strong. So let's start with what emotional intimacy really is. This is our definition.
Mm-hmm.
Emotional intimacy means feeling emotionally connected to your partner. And that means you sense that she knows and cares about who you are, how you feel, and what you want and need. And if she feels emotionally intimate with you, that means she also senses that you know and care about who she is, how she feels, and what she wants and needs.
And when two people feel emotionally intimate with each other, there's just really a natural generosity between those people. Each person wants the person they love to have what they want and need and what makes them happy. And when each person feels that desire for the other's well-being, and can also stay clear on her own wants and needs, a relationship can feel sweet and loving and easy, even though two people's wants and needs are never exactly the same.
So usually this is how things are at the beginning of a new relationship. Your heart is wide open, and you want to know everything about your new girlfriend. You feel connected to her. You want her to have what she needs, and she feels the same toward you. So things work great for the first few weeks or the first few months. Sometimes even longer. But after a while, almost always, something changes. And you might start to feel like that flow isn't there anymore. You're no longer feeling like you're getting what you want and need from her, or at least not fully. And it might be that what you want is what you and she used to have, and you just want it to go on the same way. It might feel like your needs have stayed the same and hers have changed, which can feel very painful and confusing.
Or you might find that your needs have changed. Maybe you want even more closeness from her now. Or maybe you have other parts of your life that you put on hold when you were first falling in love, and even though you love your new girlfriend, you want to get back to them. You might want to pay more attention to your career again, or spend time with your friends, or work on one of your hobbies again. Or there may just be things that you put off for a while or let slide and you can't do that anymore. You have to get back to them now. Or maybe the closeness felt good for a while, but now it feels like too much, like she just wants or needs too much.
The truth is that all people need both closeness and intimacy, and all people also need separateness and autonomy. But we don't all need them in the same ways at the same moments. So this is where the conflict comes in. Often when two women get to this point and they start wanting different amounts of closeness, they do one of three things, none of which actually work. So we're going to talk about these non-working strategies before we get to what does work. Non-working approach number one is you might try to convince your partner that your way is better. For instance, if you're the one who wants more closeness, you might feel like the closeness you want is healthy and she must just be scared of intimacy. And I have to admit that I spent a lot of time doing this in more than one relationship. I kept trying to get my partners to change and give me what I wanted, even if that meant they had to change what they wanted.
But even if you're the one who needs more space, you might also think the space you need is healthy, and your partner is just clingy and needy. So you might see her desires as the problem and try to get her to change. Sometimes both women end up trying to persuade each other that they're right and the other is wrong, but most of us don't respond well to being seen as wrong or being pressured to change. So this approach does not lead to a happy relationship.
Now, the second approach that doesn't work, which is kind of a variation on the first, is that some people tend to see their partner as right and see themselves as wrong. So if you take this approach, you might tell yourself that your partner's desire for more closeness or more space is actually the right way to be, and then you pressure yourself to try to be more like her, and you feel bad that you're not more like her. And I actually did this one too, as I mentioned. And the problem is that pressuring yourself to change doesn't really work any better than having someone else pressure you to change. You can't make yourself want something different than you want. It doesn't work.
And so in non-working approach number three, people try to negotiate a compromise in which each person will give up something of what she wants in order to meet her partner's needs. So for instance, if one woman really wants to spend every night together, but the other only wants to be together 2 nights a week, then you might agree that you'll spend 4 nights a week together. That way, one person is only getting 3 nights a week less than she really wants, and the other person is only having to give 2 nights a week more than she really wants. This approach might sound reasonable in a way. I mean, compromise is, I think, an often used word in relationships. Must compromise. But the problem with this kind of compromise is that neither person ends up happy. Both women feel like they've given up what they really want.
And if you're the person who wants to be together every night, then only getting 4 nights a week is still going to feel like a sacrifice. And if you're the person who only wants to be together 2 nights a week, then feeling forced to be together 4 nights a week is also not going to feel good to you. And having two people who feel like they're sacrificing their own wants and needs is not going to create a long-term, happy, healthy relationship. Over time, both of you will start to feel resentful, and that resentment will show up in your relationship somehow. So you might be fighting. You might just have this ongoing sense of hurt or bitterness, or you might just feel less open and connected, and the same thing is likely to happen on her end. And I'm guessing that probably a lot of you on the line tonight have had some of this experience, and that's why we're going through it in so much detail, because we want you to know that this happens over and over between people. It plays out in very predictable ways if you don't have the tools that we want to share with you in a little while. So when you feel like you're both giving up something important and neither one of you is getting what you really want, you actually often will end up feeling pitted against each other, like your partner is the person who's keeping you from getting your needs met. And so in some corner of your mind, you actually start to see her as an obstacle to your happiness and well-being.
And in this situation, most likely one of you will end up leaving, physically or emotionally, or maybe having an affair. And or even if you do stay together, you'll have distance and hurt and anger between you, which will prevent you from feeling close and emotionally intimate. So it might be starting to sound like there's no solution here. If both people have different needs and it doesn't work for them to sacrifice those needs, then all relationships are doomed?
But, of course, the answer to that is no. There is a solution, and we're going to share it with you. We just want to take a quick look at why these conflicts emerge to begin with, and also why it can feel so completely terrible when we're in this kind of conflict. It can feel like it would be better not to be with the other person at all rather than have her only meet some of your needs. And we're going to talk about why that happens. So as we said earlier, all people need both closeness and separateness. But it's impossible for any two people to need them in the exact same ways at the exact same moments. There is a certain amount of difference between any two partners. But why does this difference seem to come on so suddenly at times, and why can it feel so intensely hard and painful to navigate?
One reason is that when we first fall in love, we enter into a state called limerence. And this term is a particular term about brain chemistry that gets set off when two people get strongly drawn to each other. Our brains are hardwired to get us to mate and keep mating, and so we'll make babies. And although two women can't have a baby together, at least not without help of a sperm donor, the brain chemistry is the same. And so when you fall in love, your brain will start pumping out all sorts of endogenous opiates and oxytocin and all these amazing drugs, which basically the equivalent of your body's heroin. And it's why it feels so great when you're first in love, because you're literally high. You're stoned.
And we have found that this state of limerence happens even more strongly between two women than between two people of, you know, other genders or orientations. It, you know, we don't know to what extent it's biological and to what extent it's socialization, but often in this culture, men will tend to resist this state of bonding. You know, you've probably heard straight women friends talk about, you know, I just want him to commit and he won't. And, you know, whereas when two women get together, very often initially, both women will just dive in to this place of bliss, this love high, where you feel like you just want to be together every minute and spend all your time, you know, thinking about each other, talking about each other, being with each other, touching each other.
Yeah.
But the limerence can't last.
Yeah, I mean, over time, your brain chemistry will eventually turn to normal because it has to. It doesn't always happen at the same time for both people. People have very ranges of when this might fade. And one woman's brain might get back to normal in a month, and someone else can stay in limerence for 6 months. So the person who's still in limerence will naturally want more closeness, while the person who's gone back to normal brain chemistry will want to get back to a life that looks more similar to the one she used to have, even if she loves her new girlfriend.
Easing out of limerence and into love that can be healthy and lasting over the long term take some conscious awareness and skills, because what works when you're both high as a kite on love and lust, brain chemistry, won't work when your brains get back to normal. And you actually have to figure out the details of a life together. So this is one of the reasons why this issue of closeness and space comes up. But there's an even bigger reason, and that's because human beings are actually designed to merge and then to individuate.
When you were a tiny baby, you were wired to panic when you got left alone, because human babies are so small and helpless, and we actually would literally die if somebody didn't take care of us. So deep inside you, you have this panic button that can get set off when you feel too alone, and it can feel life-threatening, even though you're actually a capable adult now.
And I know for me, the panic button around aloneness gets set off specifically when I'm in a relationship. If I'm single and I'm alone, it's actually much easier. But if I'm in a relationship and my partner gets distant, that's when it can set off the panic. And it's because of this state that remains in us from our infancy. Now, once you moved out of infancy and got to the age of about 2, you developed, all of us develop, a different need, which is the need to become a separate person. And that's why they call it the terrible twos, because all of a sudden a two-year-old stops wanting to do what her mother wants. She's not just wanting to be bonded to her mother constantly. She needs to start asserting herself. And this is totally normal and necessary and healthy. We're biologically programmed to start separating from our mothers or whoever has been meeting all our needs up to that point. We have to do it. So, again, deep inside of us, there's a panic button that can get set off if you feel like somebody is getting in the way of your being a fully separate person. And that can feel pretty life-threatening, too.
And, of course, some of us have had specific trauma with our mothers when we were little. And maybe they weren't fully present and connected when we were infants, or they weren't good at letting go of us when we needed to separate from them. This isn't about blaming mothers. In most cases, our mothers were doing the best they could. But the bottom line is, it's a scary time to be a little helpless infant, and it's also scary to be a two-year-old who has to become a separate person. And all the fears from those early times have lasting effects on our brains, which show up in our intimate relationships as adults.
So for some of us, it can feel really safe to be close, but not so safe to feel separate. And so feeling separate can be the main thing that sets off the panic button. And in that case, we call that state PAP, which stands for Primal Abandonment Panic.
And for some of us, it feels safer to be separate and not so safe to be close. So feeling too close can set off the panic button we call PEP, or primal engulfment panic. And for many of us, being close feels unsafe in one way, and being separate feels unsafe in a different way, so you can actually find yourself prone to both PAP and PEP. Some of us are more prone to PAP, and some of us are more prone to PEP, and some of us struggle with both depending upon the circumstances.
But the challenge is that whichever state you're in, it can set off the opposite state in your girlfriend or partner. So if you're in the primal abandonment panic place, that can set off her primal engulfment panic place. And if you're in the primal engulfment panic place, the PEP place, that can set off her PEP, the abandonment panic place. And that's exactly what happened with the partner I was traveling in India with that I was talking about earlier. I can't even say where it started. Maybe it started with her being emotionally distant, and that set off my PEP, and then that set off her PEP, and we went back and forth. Or maybe I was the one who started the cycle. It doesn't actually matter. It's not, because it's not about blame. What matters is understanding what happens when this is going on, because when you don't understand it, it can feel like such a terrible mess where you're either blaming yourself or you're blaming her, and she's doing the same thing. So if you're in this kind of mess now, or if you've ever been in this kind of mess with a partner, we're happy to tell you that there is a solution that doesn't involve either one of you feeling wrong or making the other person feel wrong or sacrificing what you really want.
That solution is called the SCORE process. It's a 5-step process for unfreezing the part of yourself that has gone into pain and panic and getting reconnected with yourself so you can also reconnect with your partner. We have taught it to many women, both singles and couples, and they tell us that it works like a charm. It takes some practice and some commitment to learn the 5 steps, and then a little time for you to get really good at them so you can do them automatically without having to think about it. But once you get there, the SCORE process is like a miracle. Because it doesn't just work for conflicts where one person wants more closeness and the other wants more space. It works for any kind of conflict. When both people use it, it completely stops hurt feelings, resentments, and fights. Your relationship gets smooth, harmonious, and easy, and the minute there's any little ruffle, you can use the SCORE process and get back to smoothness again.
And I know it might start to sound like we're selling snake oil, like this is too good to be true. So we hope you'll just stay with us and keep listening. And, the really good thing, too, that we want to share is that we hear from a lot of women who are in relationships where, one person is really motivated to learn more tools and the other person is not. And even if only one member of a couple learns the SCORE process and uses it, it still has very powerful results. Because as we all know, it takes two to tango, it takes two to fight. And so once you learn how to use SCORE, even if your partner is saying and doing the exact same things, you will have a whole different way to handle them. And that will make a big difference.
So let's give an example of a couple we work with. We'll call them Lisa and Danielle, not their real names. Danielle had a demanding job and also co-parented 2 children with her ex-partner. So she had kids every other week. Lisa was a consultant who set her own schedule and worked out of her home office. So by the time Danielle got home, Lisa really wanted to spend time with her. But on the weeks when Danielle didn't have the kids, she really liked to spend time, quiet time, just playing computer games or decompressing from a work day. And when she did have the kids, she would go straight into doing homework and playing with them. And she'd be exhausted by the time they were in bed. So Lisa ended up feeling like Danielle never had enough time or attention for her. She felt lonely, frustrated, hurt, and resentful. Meanwhile, Danielle also felt hurt, frustrated, and resentful because she felt like Lisa didn't understand how hard she worked at her job and at being a mom.
So Lisa basically said when she started working with us, "I want a relationship where my partner and I spend most evenings together. Most couples do that. I'm not asking for anything unreasonable." But Danielle said, "I spend so much time taking care of other people. I don't want our relationship to be one more thing I have to take care of. I need some me time to get rejuvenated." And this conflict had driven them so far apart that they were fighting a lot. They weren't having fun together anymore. Danielle was sleeping on the couch a lot of the time. They were considering breaking up. And once they learned the SCORE process and started using it, their sense of conflict and hurt and disconnection began to melt away. And they started actually having fun with each other again and feeling close. And once they felt close again, they were able to see the issue between them differently. And this is really the key piece. Because once they could see it differently, they were able to come up with some solutions that didn't feel like a compromise or a sacrifice to either one of them. And these solutions were great, but if we had worked with them, you know, in the way that many therapists, in my experience anyway, might work, rather than the way that we coach, we might have just tried to give them these solutions from the beginning, right? Mm-hmm. And how would that have gone?
I don't think it would have gone very well. I mean, I think really without the SCORE process, they wouldn't have been able to feel close enough to shift out of the dynamic where each of them felt hurt and angry, and they couldn't get back to really being able to work together as a loving team. If you're not feeling close to each other, it's unlikely that any solution you come up with will actually work. The key is getting back to that state of emotional intimacy first. Then, once you feel close and connected, the solutions to your conflicts get much easier.
But most of us think we have to solve the problem before we can feel close again. And in fact, the opposite is true. We have to feel close again before we can solve the problem. But it's still really hard to feel close when we've got this conflict going on. So I hear some noise on the line there. If you know you have noise on your line, maybe you can mute yourself. Recording. So now we're going to talk about what the SCORE process actually is and how it works its magic. There are 5 steps, and we don't have time tonight to teach you the whole process in enough detail for you to be able to learn it fully and apply it. So we will share with you how you can get our personal support learning the whole process and putting it to work in your life, whether you're in a relationship or single, in a little while. But for right now, we're going to go over step number 2 of the 5 steps, because just this step alone is very powerful.
So step 2 is connecting to yourself with compassion. And this step alone is really powerful. So what does it mean to connect to yourself with compassion? Basically, it means to put a tender, supportive hand on your own shoulder, emotionally speaking, just the way you might with a friend who is having a hard time. Self-compassion doesn't mean feeling sorry for yourself. It doesn't mean telling yourself you're right and your partner's wrong. It actually doesn't have anything to do with right and wrong at all. It just means being present with yourself in a loving way. If you're like a lot of women we work with, you might be really good at giving compassion to other people, but not so good at giving it to yourself. And the good news is this can change. Brain research has proven that our brains have neuroplasticity, which means that we can actually change the physical structures of our brains just by thinking new thoughts and feeling new feelings. And if we do it consistently, it seems to take about a month or so of a practice for at least 5 or 10 minutes a day to really get implanted in the brain.
And taking a month to develop more compassion for yourself through this process, and we don't mean you have to take a month out from a relationship if you're in it, it just means putting some consistent focus on developing more compassion for yourself, is probably the number one thing that most people can do to increase their own happiness, whether you're in a relationship or single. Having compassion for yourself has a huge impact on how you respond to challenges and conflict and how good you feel moment to moment and day to day. And of course, part of this is about your relationship with yourself, because whether you're in an intimate relationship with someone else or not, you're always in a relationship with yourself. And so having compassion for yourself is about making your intimate relationship with yourself work better.
So we'd like to lead you through a powerful meditation that we found really helps people develop compassion for yourself. And it is based upon a Buddhist practice. Many of you may have been introduced to it or may actually know it very well and may use it all the time. It's called metta, or loving-kindness meditation. We've changed some of the words, and we've made it focus just on you. And we found in working with women that it can make a huge difference in their experience. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to say a number of phrases out loud, and we encourage you to say them to yourself along with us. Saying these phrases to yourself might feel a little funny or embarrassing to you. It might seem boring or make you feel uncomfortable, or it might make you feel good. However it feels, we'd encourage you to just notice the feeling and just keep saying the phrases along with me.
And since you're muted, you can actually say the phrases out loud if you're in an environment where you feel comfortable doing that. And that works even more powerfully than saying them silently.
Yes, that's true. So we're going to go through the whole set of phrases. Make sure that you're comfortable, you know, sitting or maybe lying down. Just that you're in a comfortable place and close your eyes. And take a breath in and a breath out. A breath in and a breath out. These are the phrases. May I be happy. May I know my true worth. May I know that I am lovable. May I love and be loved with ease. May I be happy. May I know my true worth. May I know that I am lovable. May I love and be loved with ease. May I be happy. May I know my true worth. May I know that I am lovable. May I love and be loved with ease. May I be happy. May I know my true worth. May I know that I am lovable. May I love and be loved with ease. May I be happy. May I know my true worth. May I know that I am lovable. May I love and be loved with ease.
So, just take some time to let yourself kind of soak in the impact of those phrases. And some of you may have found that those phrases felt really good already, just to hear them, to say them to yourself. And for some of you, it might have felt uncomfortable. Some of you might have gotten emotional. Some of you might have just thought it was weird. Some of you might have had trouble shifting gears from the other part of the call. So whatever your reaction was is fine. But what we want you to know from having worked with many, many women is that a process like this can shift things for you over time, whether it shifts things right away or not. And it's because it has a kind of a thawing, melting effect on our being. When we're in that state of conflict, we're triggered. And when you're triggered, as you probably know, your brain basically goes into fight or flight mode. That's when it feels like the other person is your enemy. And you've got to, you know, get her to change. You've got to get yourself to change. You've got to get away. Something's got to shift. You know, that's fight or flight. And when you can bring yourself into a process of self-compassion, like the metta process, it gets your brain out of the fight or flight mode where the other person is looking like an enemy, and gets you back into a state of peace within yourself. And it's from that state of peace within yourself that the closeness between you and whoever you're in conflict with can actually reemerge once you've gotten your brain out of that triggered place.
I used to be very hard on myself, very self-critical. I had a hard time feeling compassion for myself. And I felt like I was defective, or whatever I did was probably going to be wrong. But I used the meta practice every day for quite a while, actually over a year, and it completely changed my life. I became much more gentle with myself and much more at ease with whatever happened. Now when something goes wrong, I find myself automatically having compassion for myself because I actually changed the structure of my brain by using this practice. You probably can imagine how just this step alone can make a difference in conflicts. If both people, or even one person, is able to feel compassion for herself, some of the tension and pain and fear automatically starts melting away. Even if nothing has changed on the outside, everything is starting feeling different, because the more compassion you have for yourself, the more you unlock from the power struggle.
And, of course, connecting to yourself with compassion is only one of the 5 steps in the SCORE process, and the other 4 steps are equally important. So while just having more compassion for yourself will make a difference, it won't dissolve your conflict on its own. You do need the other 4 steps of the SCORE process to do that. Now, we do also, though, we love to teach couples to use this metta practice with one another, because as powerful as it is to say this kind of blessing to yourself, you know, may I be happy, may I know my true worth, may I know that I am lovable, may I love and be loved with ease. It's really amazing when someone else says it to you, may you be happy, may you know your true worth. And it's really amazing to get to bestow that blessing upon someone else. So again, when we do this with couples or even just with women who don't know each other in workshops, the effect is really profound. But you do need the other 4 steps of the SCORE process as well to be able to handle conflict effectively. So how can you learn both this step well enough to put it to use when you really need it and the other 4 steps so that your relationships can go from painful or disconnected to easy, connected, and fun?
And we found that the absolute best way for you to learn SCORE is by working directly with us. So we can coach you through your specific situation and whatever obstacles come up and really support you in learning the exact skills that will make a difference. You can try to learn it on your own, but for most of us, it's hard to really get it and able to apply it without having some personal support and help. So there are several ways we offer that support. One is through coaching. We do coaching for both single women and for couples, and also for individual women who are in couples. And we found that whether you're single or partnered, if your love life is where you want it to be, is not where you want it to be, coaching is a fast-track way to get where you want to go.
And coaching is totally different from therapy in that it focuses on helping you build specific skills. Now, both Michelle and I have done plenty of therapy as clients ourselves. We have a lot of respect for therapy. Therapy can be very helpful. But what we found both in our own experience and in working with many of the women we work with is that somebody can go through a lot of therapy and have a lot more understanding about where their issues came from in their past, and, you know, this happened because your mother was like this or your father was like this or these things happened in your early childhood. And yet that in itself doesn't give you the skills, the specific skills that you need to have to be able to do things differently.
And my favorite metaphor about this, it's funny that it's a sports metaphor, if you are, imagine a basketball coach who is watching their athlete do a layup. And, you know, the basketball coach might notice, oh, you know, they need to learn how to jump higher. And so they're going to need to work on these muscles and these actions. Or they need to, you know, move their arm a little bit differently. And so they're going to need to change the way they're, you know, build up the triceps and learn some particular kinds of moves. It's very skill-based.
So that's the role that we, and especially Michelle, because she does most of our coaching, that she plays when she's working with individuals or with couples. Is, you know, she listens to your specific situation where you find yourself getting derailed by conflict, or where you might have gotten derailed by it in the past, you know, where you've gotten stuck, or where you and your partner are getting stuck now. And then she helps you focus in on exactly the pieces, the specific skills that you need. Most people need basically all five steps of the SCORE process.
They absolutely do.
Yeah. And sometimes some other aspects of what we call the skills to communicate and be heard.
Getting in touch with feelings is a sort of prerequisite.
Right, right. But then there's particular ways to communicate those feelings.
Yes.
And to be with those feelings inside. So this is part of what we offer in coaching. And it usually takes about 6 coaching sessions to really learn and practice and become totally able to apply the SCORE process to your life. But everybody's situation is different. So we suggest that if you're interested in exploring the possibilities of coaching for yourself, that you start with an initial, what we call a love breakthrough consultation. And we offer the initial love breakthrough consultation at a super low price so that there's, you know, very little to keep you from trying it and finding out about it. So it's only $30, actually $29.99, so that you get a whole hour with Michelle working with you as your coach to get to tell her more about your needs, whatever's happening in your love life, and she can give you her recommendation for the process that will help you to shift in whatever way you need to shift. And like I said, often it's just 6 sessions. Sometimes if a couple is, you know, really stuck in some patterns, it can take a little bit more than that. But it's very focused. It's very targeted. So it's not like going to therapy where you might go for, you know, months and months or years. It's really about learning these specific skills that can break through the conflict. So if you're interested in that consultation, you can go to consciousgirlfriend.com/breakthrough, or you can just send us an email and we'll send you to the right link. Now, we also offer another option for single women, which is a 12-week online class, which we call the 12-week roadmap to successful dating and lasting love. And in that class, there are 12 hours of live group coaching included. And in that 12-week class, we cover SCORE in depth, as well as all the other skills that we've found that women really need in order to be able to date wisely and love well. And we're going to be starting the next 12-week roadmap class in mid-July. So if that interests you, you can go to consciousgirlfriend.com/roadmap and find out more about the roadmap class. So either way, whether you opt for individual coaching or for the 12-week roadmap class, we really look forward to helping you learn the SCORE process so that you can create the lasting emotional intimacy you really want. I've seen it firsthand work for my clients, and it's really we've seen it work firsthand for us. So it's a great process.
Yeah, it's very cool when you know, any little edge starts happening between us, any little, you know, friction or rub or place of discomfort, or, you know, like even earlier tonight, you know, I said something to Michelle that I was afraid maybe had a little tiny bit of an edge. But I knew that we both have the SCORE process, so those things will not grow. And part of the SCORE process, which we didn't go over tonight, is, you know, doing a number of steps inside of yourself. The first 4 of the 5 steps take place inside of yourself. And then in the 5th step, you get to be really clear about what you need to communicate to the other person.
Mm-hmm.
And along with the other communication skills we teach, you learn exactly how to communicate that in a way which brings you closer, which heals conflict, rather than creating a rift or starting a fight. So,
yeah,
that's pretty much what we always do.
Yeah, it is what we always do.
And
pretty automatically. I mean, it's not, I don't have to think, oh, okay, I need a SCORE. It just happens.
Right. And so that's what's important to get across too, because, you know, at first, if you're just hearing about this for the first time, it might be like, well, wait a minute, you're saying relationships don't have to be hard work, but I have to learn this whole five-step process and, you know, remember to use it, and how is that going to go? And so there is an initial learning curve. That is true. But because of neuroplasticity, as Michelle was telling you about earlier, you know, because of the way that the brain structures actually change as you learn new skills, what you learn will become automatic. So just as you probably, you know, at one point you really had to work hard to learn how to drive, I know I did. I remember the first time I drove, I was driving a stick shift car, and I was like, oh my God, you know, I have to operate, you know, the clutch and the brake and the gas and the steering wheel and, you know, not kill anybody, you know, but now, of course, I get in a car and drive, and it's easy. I don't even have to think about it. And I'm sure that there are many other things in your life that are like that, that at one point took some effort to learn and now have become totally automatic. So the SCORE process works like that too.
So now we'll take your questions, and to unmute yourself on the system, just do **. If you muted your phone, then you have to unmute your phone, but the system, do **.
And we'd love to hear your questions about communication in general, intimacy in general, about the coaching we do, the 12-week roadmap class, issues that come up in your relationship or have in the past, whatever you'd like to ask us about. So whoever is brave enough, just hit **, and we will talk with you and give you some coaching. And we hope somebody will be brave enough, because we know that everybody else will learn a lot from whatever you share.
It looks like someone from Atlanta unmuted themselves, so I don't know. Maybe you'll be the first one.
Yes, can everyone hear me?
Yes.
Oh, geez. Regarding communication, when you're speaking with your partner and, you know, you have a disagreement and you become upset, is it best to try to wait until you calm down if one party is upset and one party is not? Or is it best to just try to talk it out then?
No. So let me tell you what's important about what happens when you get upset, you know, or we call it triggered. Some people call it flooded. What's happening is your brain, an old part of your brain, which is actually turned on when you're doing that fight or flight, you know, you're trying to like run away from a tiger even though it's just your partner. What it does is something called the amygdala hijack, and it actually hijacks your sort of thinking, wise mind. It just, like, it turns it off. It just, like, turns it right off. And so it's really important that you don't speak from that place of being upset and triggered. Take some breaths. You know, when you learn the SCORE process, you can go through that. People often say, you know, I'm going to go take a break, walk around the block, you know, go to my room for a little bit of time, to really get yourself back to a place of normal, so that you're not hijacking your wise cognitive mind. And what's important is if you take a break, you say, hey, you know, I can't talk about this right now. I'm going to go take a walk. I'll be back in an hour or 2 hours. Let's talk about it then.
Right.
But what if your partner keeps, like, talking, you know, at you while you're – because they're not – obviously not upset, but you are.
Well, it, or she may actually be upset as well. She may be triggered too, and her way of handling it is to just keep talking. Do you feel like in your situation that she doesn't realize that you've gotten upset?
No, she realizes that I've gotten upset. It's just when I say I don't want to talk about it, that it seems like that's like a trigger for her to keep talking about it and keep mentioning it. When, you know, I'm like, I don't want to talk about it right now.
Right. So one thing that might help is to have a conversation when neither one of you is upset, you know, at a neutral moment. And I don't know if she's on the line now or if you're going to share with her some of what you're learning tonight. But if you can say to her, hey, you know, I've realized that when I get upset, or when either one of us gets upset, our brain goes into a different state, which is not the state from which we can healthily have a good conversation. So if you can reach an agreement ahead of time that when this kind of conflict starts happening, that you can mutually take a little time out. It doesn't mean you won't have the conversation. You do need to have the conversation, but you need to have it at a time when you're not in that triggered place. Because from that triggered place, as you probably know, people say all kinds of things that end up being really, you know, hurtful. We do things that are hurtful. It makes things worse when we try to have that conversation when your brain is in that triggered state.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, sure. thank you for
welcome.
Asking that. And I think what often happens is, you know, like I know for me, I was probably more often in the role of your partner. Like if somebody just wouldn't talk about something or said, you know, I don't want to talk about that now, it would make me feel kind of more frantic. Like, what do you mean you don't want to talk about it now? We need to talk about it now. This is a real issue. You know, and that's why it's so important for both people to have an understanding, ideally, of what's going on and to have an agreement that these things will get talked about in a moment when we can both approach them from a more skilled, resourced place. And the rest of the SCORE process is one great way of getting there. There are, you know, there may be other ways that you can get there, but one way or another, it is important to back off from the place of conflict when you're triggered and have both people's agreement about doing that.
Okay, other questions? Again, ** to unmute your phone.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi. Oh, this is such a really helpful program. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome. I'm glad.
My question is, I am in, like, the beginning, like, honeymoon stage, and it's been really great, but there has been a couple of points that have been telling, like, oh, goodness, this is going to be a conflict in the future. And I think part of the problem is that there's so much melding and loveliness happening right now, and we're seeing all the ways in which we're really, like, cosmically connected and all of that. But there are some, like, political identity things that are pretty different, you know, like around class and race. And on some level, I just want to kind of acknowledge that those are big differences and trying to find some place of, like, merging around them might actually be a little bit like about disappearing those differences and
right.
maybe not helpful.
And
to some degree, I also feel like we need to be able to talk about them without getting super heated. So
yeah.
I don't know. I wanted to kind of bring that up.
Yeah, I think what's most important, you're right. You know, those differences are they're who you are. They're true. They're inescapable. And what's most important is that you can approach them with openness, you know, with compassion for each other, and also with some personal responsibility. And so if there's something that gets triggered in one of you by something the other said or by some identity issue, that you can really say, oh, okay, that's coming up for me. That's what's coming up for me. And to speak that feeling that's coming up. Because this difference that you have is going to be there, and because you have different, there's different cultural origins, there's different, you were raised differently. I mean, that's true of actually any two people. We're raised differently. We have sometimes different, all sorts of differences, and they do definitely come up, and just like any conflict, it's approaching that conflict with compassion, with being able to really deal with your emotions around it.
And the SCORE process is really our go-to process for those kinds of issues as well as all other issues. And I can give you a little example. Are you there?
Yeah.
We have a little example of an issue that came up around you know, that we realized had to do with some race and class stuff between us that I think we have an article about on our website. And this is when we were going on a trip, and I have this old suitcase. It's actually the same suitcase I had with me in India many years ago, which has gotten some rips, but I'm very fond of the suitcase, and so I had actually, like, sewn it up with some messy dental floss because I didn't want to throw it out. And Michelle realized.
Well, I realized that, I would never be seen dead with, you know, a suitcase like that. With my own sort of familial thing about appearance. And I've, you know, for the most part, I've started most of it, right? But it is there in me. And so when I saw it, it was like there was something that came up and you asked me about it. And you know, and then I looked at that. I was like, oh, yeah, you know, that's what that is. It's my stuff. It doesn't have anything to do with Ruth, you know. It doesn't matter to me, really, you know, what her suitcase looks like. But it did come up, but it didn't have to be a conflict.
And the really cool thing is that I actually realized, you know, I'm Jewish, and yeah, many Jewish people have a thing about sort of frugality and thrift. And so my desire not to get rid of the suitcase could even have been coming out of that. I mean, it's my personality, but it's also, there's that cultural thread. Whereas for Michelle, when I really thought about it, and when we had this conversation after having both done our own little version of the score process so that we were speaking from a really clear place, because the first thing that she said was like, oh, you can bring that suitcase. I'll just pretend I don't know you. So then I thought about the fact that, you know, for her walking through the world as an African-American person, it means something very different. You know, if you're African American and people see you with a suitcase that's held together with dental floss, you know, the assumptions that they might make of her are really different. It's you know, what it means for her to walk through the world with that is not the same as what it means for me. And, you know, some of that's because I have the privilege of having white skin. So that's because you brought up race and class. I just wanted to share that particular example. But we were able to talk about it with love and respect and humor. And once I realized why it made her uncomfortable, I was like, oh, well, I don't have to bring that suit. Fine. You know, but once she, you know, we both sort of looked at it, she was like, oh, well, I'm really fine if you do bring that suitcase. So I don't remember, did I bring it or not?
You did.
I did?
Yeah, it was fine.
So does that address your question, Jasmine? Was it Jasmine who was asking?
Yes, thank you so much.
Yeah,
you're
welcome. So welcome. Is there somebody else with a question?
Good evening, this is Wida.
Hi.
Hi. So I am interested in learning more about limerence.
Mm-hmm.
And how that shows up in new relationships, how it shows up in dating, and what can be done around that.
That's a big question.
Okay.
And it's so nice to hear from you, Wida. So limerence is inevitable. When we get to that point, especially where there's mutual attraction, you know, as we said at the workshop that you came to, sometimes people go into limerence all by themselves. You know, if you just have a big crush on somebody, you can be in limerence alone. But when two people start a romantic relationship, you know, unless, like the one person who came to the workshop who said she didn't experience it, and I think she must have just learned very early on to really compensate for it in a profound way. She's actually the only person we've ever talked to who said she doesn't go into limerence. From what we know, pretty much everybody does, and it's because it's this hardwired brain chemistry thing. So it's going to happen, and it's really sweet and amazing and thrilling and fun when it happens. It's like the last caller was saying, you know, how great everything feels. But one thing I like to think about is using that sense of openness and connectedness and emotional generosity that arises naturally when we're in limerence as as an example of what we can get to the rest of the time when we're no longer in limerence if we have the right skills. You know, it's kind of like, I've never done the drug ecstasy, but some people, you know, I've talked to talk about how when they're on ecstasy, you know, they just feel so much love for everybody around them, and it just opens them up, you know, and then the ecstasy wears off, and it's not like that anymore. So it's basically the same thing with limerence.
And it's really important to sort of maintain, it's hard to maintain total objectivity. I mean, you can't because you're drugged, you're stoned, right? But it's really important to do your best to try to maintain a bit of objectivity and also to don't make any big decisions. Don't move in together, don't get married, don't make any big life decisions.
Don't get engaged.
Don't get engaged. Because it's just, you know, that state is not real. It's, you know, it's based on lust, it's based on attraction, you know, there's affection and stuff there, but it's not that sort of, you know, it's not that mature love.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's not real, but it's not sustainable until you develop the other foundational aspects of a relationship that then will help you get back to that sweetness in a more solid, sustainable way. It's real, but it's just not going to last in that form. Is this, do you have other more specific questions, Wida?
No. That was good. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to talk about because I think it's real in the sense that when, at least I know when I'm in limerence, it's like the way I see the other person is at her absolute best.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's
mm-hmm.
it's like really being able to see someone's core and falling in love with her potential and her essence. And it's a wonderful thing. It's like I think it's great to learn from the way that we see in limerence,
mm-hmm.
not just dismiss it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it's not the way that we can have emotional intimacy when we're in limerence is not the same way it's
mm-hmm.
going to work three months or 6 months or
a year
down the line.
I guess what I mean by not real is that it's like a pair of rose-colored glasses, and you only see certain things and you don't see a lot of other things.
Well,
and
that
so,
can be a danger.
Yeah.
So
you're not seeing the world or this person. You're not seeing this person in their full reality, I guess is what I mean.
Mm-hmm. But I think what the other caller was bringing up where, you know, it sounded like she's in limerence with this in this new relationship, and it's beautiful, but even so, she can see around the edges
uh-huh.
these hints of things that
right.
could become a conflict later.
Yeah.
And I think that's great because you can definitely do that with even when you're in limerence, and you can train yourself to pay attention to those things rather than ignore them and act like they're not there, which is what I always used to do. Like I would see things when I was in limerence, but I was like, you know, oh, well, that just won't crop up again, or that'll get better with time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've talked about this a lot. And
yes.
In fact, if you don't have the skills to work with it, it usually actually gets worse with time rather than better. So thank you for asking that. And so we'd love to hear other questions.
Hi, this is Jenna. How are you?
Hey, Jenna. We're good.
Hey, so how do you navigate it when one of you is in limerence?
The one of you is in limerence and the other person is not in limerence yet or has gotten out of limerence, like if you're at the beginning.
Or may never be.
Uh-huh. Okay. So, like, you've kind of really fallen for somebody, but she's not in the same place as you are.
Yeah. Sorta.
Okay. Well.
Definitely crushed it.
Uh-huh.
And attracted to.
Okay. I mean, I think part of it might be to understand, you know, to really remind yourself that limerence isn't love. Like, if you're in limerence, you're crushed out, you're having all these feelings of, like, you know, totally into her, and maybe she's being more cautious.
She's not letting herself go into limerence, or it's just not happening for her in the same way. It doesn't mean that the two of you can't get to know each other and really start building something together. It just takes your, you know, I would imagine it might feel scary or painful if you feel like you're in limerence and she's not. But when you remember that limerence is just a state of brain chemistry, it's not actually a real indicator of whether you and she could have a good relationship. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, it does. I mean, I think those are the things I'm trying to understand and to navigate through.
Mm-hmm. And I think just being able to have this language for it, like, oh, I see that I'm in limerence and she isn't, could be helpful in itself, because otherwise, you know, somebody might say, well, I'm in love with you and you're not in love with me, you know, and it's not the same thing, although limerence is, you know, sometimes when we're in limerence, we say we're in love.
Right.
It's, you know, what we actually recommend for couples, you know, especially new couples or people that are just beginning to date or explore the possibility of dating, is to try to take things slow and really find out more about who is this other person. You know, what are her needs? What are her hopes, her fears? What is her relationship vision? You know, to know those kinds of things about yourself as well, and to see how those places in you line up or don't line up, and be able to proceed. I guess the challenge with limerence is that it tends to make us just want to dive in, and then we don't proceed usually very consciously. So that's when both people are in limerence. Often it's just like, you know, woo, full speed ahead, you know, and then at a certain point it's like, oh, we just went full speed ahead into a brick wall. So I think it could be kind of cool if the other person's not in limerence, but she's interested in continuing to explore with you. If you can handle that feeling of, wait a minute, she's not where I am and I wish she was, and come to see it as there's actually some advantage to your both not being full on in limerence, that might really work. And a lot of it too probably involves you giving more compassion to yourself for the vulnerability of feeling like you're in love and she's not.
That makes sense.
Yeah. So any other questions, or does that feel like it addresses what you were asking?
No, I think that does. That makes a lot of sense.
Okay, great.
I think it's not an easy thing to do. But I'm definitely willing to try.
Well, one of the things that we talk about a lot, for those of you that are in the Bay Area, we have another free workshop coming up, although it's actually pretty full, on July 12th in Oakland. And we're going to be talking there about another model that we have called CATCH, which is basically, you know, what it takes to be a catch, you know, and what the other person has to be able to do in order to be a catch for you. And part of what we talk about with CATCH is the ability to know what you're feeling when you feel it, and the ability to tolerate your feelings. Because there's no question that these feelings that come up when we're in dating and relationships, or even just crushed out on somebody, like you said, these are strong feelings. And they can be very uncentering and unbalancing. And so a lot of the tools that we teach are around learning how to reconnect, to hold to your own center, and tolerate your feelings without being thrown off course by them. So it absolutely can be challenging, and it also is totally doable. And we'd be happy to talk to you more about that. You know, if you do a
breakthrough session or come to the class or whatever way works for you.
Okay, sounds good. I think I already signed up for the class.
Oh, great. Okay.
Yeah.
So we've got, well, thank you so much for sharing that with us, Jenna. I appreciate
thank
it.
You.
And we've got a few more minutes if there's another question or two. We see lots of you still on the line. So if anybody else is brave enough.
And again, that's star to unmute yourself.
Hello?
Hello?
Yeah, hello?
Hi, I'm Vita.
Hi, Vita.
Hello. And my question is basically about, I don't know if it's related tonight or not, but friendships and relationships. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I have more friends than my partner does. And, you know, in the beginning of our relationship, I really didn't hang out with my friends a lot because I think I was caught up in the high, like y'all explained. And I don't really hang out with too many friends now, but it seems like if I do, my partner sometimes feels as though she may not be enough for me because I choose to hang out with friends sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to figure out how to balance it.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah.
We need, each individual needs both closeness to our partners and space alone, time alone, spend with friends, do our own interests. I mean, that actually the most healthy relationship is one where two people come together and then go apart and go off and do really cool things and then come back together and then come apart. I mean,
that's actually what feeds intimacy is
exactly.
That ability to be able to go apart without conflict, because then when you have when both people are able to do this, then when you have a little space from each other, that's what actually makes you then want to come back together again. So there's
that
natural pulsation, like the in-breath and the out-breath. But when there's a lot of conflict around the getting separate again, then that's when sometimes one person feels stuck in, well, I just need more separateness, and the other person, you know, feels, it sounds like that your partner feels like, you know, does this mean I'm not enough for you?
And I think it's important you talked about balance, and that sounds a little bit close to me to compromise. And I think that, I mean, yes, it is about balance, but I think that what's important is to really get clear on what you want, what's important to you, and express that.
But if, you know, I don't know if your partner is listening tonight or if she can maybe listen to the replay or if there's a context in which the two of you can have an open conversation at a moment when you're not arguing, like we were talking about with the other caller.
Right.
Because at the moment when either or both people are triggered is not when a good conversation can happen.
Right.
So it sounds to me like at a moment when you're not arguing, and hopefully there still are moments like that where she's not worried about not being enough for you, to have a more open conversation about some of these things that we've discussed in the call tonight, so that both of you could talk about, okay, well, if we both have needs for closeness and we both have needs for separateness and they're not identical, how can we navigate this in a way that really honors who each of us is? And that's a conversation that sometimes it's hard for people to have without some outside help at first, which is exactly why we, you know, suggest that people sign up for coaching, at least do the initial breakthrough consultation. If it feels like this would be a hard conversation to have just between you and her and have it go well.
Well, it's not really a hard conversation, but it's like she doesn't, it's hard to explain. She doesn't really have friends, and she doesn't I can't say she doesn't want friends, but it kind of seems that way.
Mm-hmm.
And that I can respect that, you know, but, you know, I do have friends, and I don't believe in putting my friends above my relationship, but, you know, even when I do hang out with my friends, sometimes, most of the time I'm ready to come back home.
Uh-huh.
So, and that's weird. That's weird. But I think that shows that I do love and care about you, because even though when I go, I'm like, wow. Sometimes I even like, wow, I'm ready to go home.
Uh-huh. So you mean like right there when you're with your friends, you feel like you don't want to be with them so much?
Sometimes.
Uh-huh.
It depends on who I'm with, but after maybe an hour or two, I'm ready to come home.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. I mean, so that's great that you know that about yourself. And it sounds like with your partner, maybe she's more introverted than you. She just isn't somebody that tends to have friends. You know, but I would wonder, does she have other interests? Does she have other things that she likes to do maybe on her own, or, you know, that she's more interested in than you are?
Well, she likes to read and write, but most of those are, you know, activities that you do alone.
Uh-huh. Right.
Right. So, but I don't know. I've tried to, like, you know, because I believe in bringing people together. I feel like sometimes my friends can be her friends, but then a lot of times it doesn't turn out that way. And then I'm the person in the middle.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, and this is the thing, you know, when we first get together with somebody, when we're in that limerence state, it's like the ways that the other person is different from us usually are part of the appeal. You know, it's actually pretty common for a more outgoing person to be drawn to a more introverted person. You know, that, as they say, sometimes opposites attract. And so when you're first together, it can feel like, wow, that's really cool that you have so many friends. Oh, that's really cool that you like to spend time alone reading and writing. And so the key with the kinds of skills that we're talking about is when each person can get back into that place of real connection to herself, and out of that feel that sense of appreciation for the other person in her difference as well. So your partner may not hit it off with your friends. It may not be her style to spend time the way you and your friends like to spend time. And, you know, you may not like to spend the kind of time alone reading and writing that she does, you know, or maybe you do. But either way, it's like these differences don't have to become a wedge between you.
And what's also important is that if you both can get in touch with the feelings that come up when you have this conflict, because maybe it's around fear, or maybe you're feeling like, oh, you know, you're a little engulfed, like you have a little primal engulfment panic, to really get in touch with that and use the SCORE process. That can help a lot in having you both learn about each other and about what's important and about what you want.
Does it feel like this is addressing your concern?
That is very beautiful what you said. I'm actually her partner, and I love the way that she's so extroverted and loves to be around people and all of those things. I have no problem with that. My only problem is when she's so welcoming. Like, she's such a welcoming and loving person that people want to come live with us.
Well, that's
a little different.
That's a little different.
So it sounds like then it might be just a different kind of conversation to have if it's literally. Are you talking about literally her friends wanting to come live with you?
I'm being as literal as I can be. People want to come live in our home because of how open and welcoming she is, and that's what I love about her. But I'm the kind of person that, I'm the kind of person that I like my privacy. Like, come over, stay as long as you want. But the old saying is, fish and people stink after 3 days. And
people want to come live with us. And it's just very strange to me that people, like, they just meet her and they just want to come. Hey, can I come live? And it's really weird to me because I like our privacy and I don't want to hurt her and I don't want to, you know, damage their relationship, but I just like it being us.
Right. So it sounds like, I don't know if this is a conversation that the two of you have already had before or if you're even having it more now than you have.
Many times.
Okay. So there may be more to talk about here. I think there is more to talk about than what we can do in this call right now. So encourage the two of you, if you're interested, to sign up for the one-hour love breakthrough consultation with Michelle. And, you know, because what I'd be curious about here is if there's ways that the two of you are misunderstanding or not fully hearing each other or what the concerns are that are getting in the way, you know, because the way that she presented the issue initially of your feeling, you know, like you weren't enough for her if she's spending time with her friends, and the way that you're presenting the issue where you're fine with her spending time with her friends, you just don't want them living with you, those are pretty different pictures that you're each painting. So, you know, so it makes me curious about what else is going on there.
We will sign up. Put it like that. Like, we need it. We'll sign up.
Okay. Uh-huh. I will be happy to speak with you.
Okay, great.
I'm looking forward to it.
Well, thank you all so much for taking part in this call. You know, there's just so much to say on this topic, and we love talking about it and, you know, working with people. So it is 7:30, so I think we're gonna bring the call to an end now. But again, we would encourage you to consider signing up for the one-hour consultation. You can get to it by emailing us or by going to consciousgirlfriend.com/breakthrough. If you're single, you might also want to consider the 12-week Roadmap to Successful Dating and Lasting Love class, single or in early, you know, in the dating process but not in a long-term relationship. And either way, we also just hope that you'll, you know, stay tuned and keep, you know, attending our teleclasses and, you know, keep in contact with us. Let us know what's coming up for you and what you need, because we're here to support you.
Yeah, it's always wonderful to do these calls. And the recording for this call will be sent by email and I guess probably put up on the meetup groups. So
yeah,
you'll have access to them.
Yeah. Is there any last thing anybody wants to say or ask, if there's any burning question or comment? Well, it's really a privilege for us. We see a whole bunch of you still on the line from all over the country, and you know, it's deeply, deeply moving for us.
It is.
And, you know, especially when I think about some of the unhappy relationship situations I was in 15 years ago, like the thought that I would be here now doing this is just, it's just amazing. So I want to say, you know, if we got here, we know for sure that you can too.
Yeah.
We got to the happy, healthy relationship we want, and you can too.
Okay. Good night, all.
Okay. Goodbye for now.